Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast, episode 3. How you doing? I'm Mo. I'm here as always with Luke and Elle. How's it going, guys? What's going on?
Hello.
Very well, thank
good.
You.
How are you?
I'm lovely. Thank you for asking. I appreciate that.
Someone finally cares how you are.
I know. Oh, it's only taken 8 years of being here. Yeah, there's lots going on as always. The current issue of Metal Hammer is still out there in shops right now. If you haven't get it, what the hell are you doing with your life? We have awesome exclusive interviews with the likes of Nightwish, Epica, Lacuna Coil, Arch Enemy, Murker, many, many, many more. It's on sale now. It's very, very special. We're very proud of it, so go pick it up. Also, don't forget that the Metal Hammer Tour featuring Trivium, Code Orange, Venom Prison and Power Trip is edging ever closer. It's basically weeks away, mates.
Basically weeks.
What's going on? We're excited.
I'm excited
on that.
So you should be. What's been going on this week? What have you been up to?
I went to see Eamon Ra.
Ooh, last week.
It was.
I mean, how was that?
It was bleak and nasty and horrible. It was. It was weird in that we were talking about protecting our hearing last week because it's probably one of the loudest gigs I've ever been to.
Oh really?
It was ridiculous.
Where was it?
At Heaven. In London, which for those who don't know is a big club and it's got a wicked sound system. But Boris, who opened, were fucking ridiculously loud. Like, it was biblical. Like, it was, because there's two types of Boris, as people might know. There's the sort of jingly jangly indie Boris.
Yeah.
Or there's like the doom Boris who just crush and kill everything. And it was the doom Boris that turned up and they played for like 90 minutes and everything was just turned up to like 13. Yeah.
Boris played in 90 minutes support.
Yeah. It was like a dual headline set. They built that. Boris played for longer than Eamon Ra.
Wow.
And they went on for ages and it was so fucking loud.
There's a lot of low end in that.
Yeah, and then to be honest, I think I get Boris. I was just a bit like, this is nonsense.
Not for you.
Not really. Like, I don't even smoke. I went outside in the cigarette area just to like hang out with people that I know. I was just like, I'm not hanging out. Yeah, exactly. I'd rather slowly die.
Wow.
But the name of Ra came on and it was just fucking brilliant. Like, I keep saying how they're...
You've been all over them for years now.
Yeah,
do you want to talk about Eamon Ra a bit for people who aren't familiar with them?
Yeah, if you don't know, I guess they're sort of post-metal, I guess. But with sort of despairing screams over the top rather than...
The best kind.
Yeah, rather than just instrumentally led. But it's really sort of slow and building and brooding and nasty and horrible. And they've got these big... like projections that overlay everything of just sort of like rivers and frost and all these just barren landscapes and everything, and it's
metal
just,
as fuck,
yeah, really fucking metal. And yeah, that they don't talk to the crowd or anything, they just come on, do their thing and leave. And
wow.
It's really fucking good.
Amazing.
I had a lovely time.
Brilliant. Definitely another band to kind of keep an eye on. They've been going on for years now, but kind of feels like they could be on the precipice.
That's like their sixth album, I think.
Could be on the edge of kind of breaking out of that scene of bands, I think.
I hope so.
Excellent. What's been going on in the world of metal this week then? Tool are apparently going to be recording the new album in March. Do we believe them for a fucking second?
Yeah.
Well, I'm convinced. Move on. I don't know what to think anymore. They've done a lot of
work on it by now, presumably. So it's just, I presume it's just the last stage to go, hopefully.
But we don't actually know that they've done a lot of work on it because every single member comes out and contradicts each other whenever they're asked about it. So
no, I think they're just usually still working
on it. You've probably been keeping a
it.
Closer ear on it than I have. What?
Yeah, it's just, I think it's just rolling along, isn't it? And hopefully we'll see it at some point. But I'm sure they're all completely sick of it because, obviously Danny's done Legend of the Seagullmen and Maynard's busy with Perfect Circle and I think a new Pussifer record's coming at some point. So they're probably all sick of being asked about it and I think it's just kind of rolling along in the background and maybe one day we will hear it.
Is it going to be 12 years this year?
Yep.
Since 10,000
yeah,
days?
A long
so
time.
We are now into Chinese democracy levels of when is this album coming out? Which when you think of kind of what the kind of whole mythos of Chinese democracy became. It became like the biggest on-running joke in rock and roll. Like it was never going to come out. And Tool are now in that time frame. It's insane. I mean, well, I don't know. Again, there's probably the least biggest Tool fan in here. I do still like him, but you guys are definitely more on it than I am with that lot. I kind of think what are you going to want from a Tool album in 2018 to justify a wait like that? Because the scene's moved on a lot since they've been around.
It has, but then they also just have that really unique sound. A lot of people have been influenced by Tool because they are so unique. So when they come out with something, it's still going to be something that's unique. It's still going to sound like Tool and not sound like someone else, I'm sure. I think Maynard's done so much in that time. He has done so much of his own stuff. He's done Pussifer and he seems to sing lower now, and it seems to be kind of more like a measured tone, and seems to be almost meditative in places. So I think his vocals will definitely be different. But the other guys write the music, so who knows what we're going to see, really.
I'm not convinced that they know what the fuck's going on, to be honest. I don't know. We'll find out one day, maybe. Who knows? What else is going on this week? What's been happening, Luke?
Well, I don't know whether you saw it. I think it was on Instagram. It looks like Behemoth are recording, obviously the new album, which is amazing.
Yes!
But also they've got a kids choir involved. Oh, yeah!
Oh, man.
For one of the songs. So it could,
Well, okay, I can only presume if it's a kids choir, it's not going to come out sounding like a Christmas carol. Like,
no.
That's going to be eerie and weird and fucked up, and I am fully here for it.
To be fair.
I watched the video. Do you guys see the video?
I haven't yet, no.
Yeah, so he's... Nurgle's sitting on the floor conducting these kids, and he's kind of like getting them to repeat things, so like something about Jesus Christ and something else that's quite biblical, and it's sort of quite dramatic. It's not kind of a "this is who we are" Rob Flynn style choir sort of like
let's not go back
talking
to that.
About
I didn't dislike that.
What
I didn't religion. Dislike it
what the what song I forgot what that song
it's the last song on Locust.
Oh, not to the Locust.
Yeah.
This is who we are.
Everyone was shitting on it when that came out.
It sucks.
I didn't. This, fine.
Mate.
I'm obviously a sucker for a kid's choir, apparently.
Oh, mate, I can't be doing with that. That's a. Oh, anyway.
So, he was sitting on the floor with these like kids, that. And it was sort of like story time with Nurgle, except he was telling them to yell out things about Jesus Christ and in English. And it's quite cute. There's this little girl who looks like she's, I don't know, maybe like 6 years old or something, looks a little bit confused, but is sort of obeying his commands.
Well, she's going to hell now. So.
Yeah. Well, he actually said...
Thanks, Nurgle.
He said in the post, like, thanks to the parents who let me do this, because, you know, it is a bit of a big deal to have your child on a satanic metal record, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be... The idea of a proper choir being on a Behemoth album... I'm so excited by that. There really aren't many albums I'm as excited about in 2018 as a new Behemoth album. I have every confidence it's going to be a landmark record for them and for the scene. So bring it on.
If they bring out a choir live as well, it's going to be fucking amazing.
I'm not sure if it's that kind of choir though. It's sort of like, you know,
we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves.
Five or six kids sitting on a few chairs while he sits on the floor and sings some songs. I think it's more I think it's very sweet, but I think it's more like, you know, have that child's voice and that kind of innocence in it. I don't think it's like a full on, you know, like massive choir type deal like you get on Dimmu Borgir or I don't know what other bands have choirs.
Pink Floyd.
Your reference points are strange today.
Bring Me the Horizon did Royal Albert Hall and they had a choir, you know, but it's not quite the same. I don't think
choirs are metal, mate. I'm telling you now. I can't wait. It's going to be amazing. And what else is happening?
Corey Taylor is apparently in the process of writing lyrics for the new Slipknot album.
Yes! Luke's a bit excited about that. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know how the hell he manages it. Because he's in the middle of this current Stone Sour cycle, really, isn't he? That's still going to go until the end of this year, at least. And he's got to... I mean, anyone who ever's listened to Corey talk about, you know, dividing time between Stone Sour and Slipknot and everything else, I mean, he has to get himself in a very specific headspace to... start thinking about Slipknot. So I'm very interested by the fact that he feels comfortable enough to kind of be going there now.
What's he going to write about, Luke?
Well, I don't know. I imagine the world. But it's weird because when I spoke to him last year, he was saying he wrote the Stone Sour record while on tour with Slipknot. Mm. So he could just be...
I bet they're stoked about that.
Yeah.
What are you doing, Corey? Nothing.
just doodling. Yeah.
Sudoku.
But didn't Clown say last year that he was already demoing stuff with
Jay?
There's obviously music floating around for months now. So Corey's maybe been working. You know, probably not sitting there going, right, here's 12 songs.
Yeah, no. We've kind of been here before with Slipknot, haven't we? Like, Corey obviously goes off and does his thing, and all of them have a shit ton of stuff going on but it kind of, I think nobody's kidding themselves in thinking that this is a band at the point where they're always together when they're writing stuff and they're always kind of on the same page all the time, and you know, these are, I guess, well, nine again, very distinct personalities all bringing something different. They're all going to be writing all over the place across the years that come between Slipknot albums, and then at some point they'll finally get in a studio together and smash it all out. I feel ready for a new Slipknot album.
Yeah, I'm ready for it. But it'd be interesting to see how much input V-Man and Josh have, or not Josh, Jay have on the writing, or whether it's just Clown saying, here's what you're playing now.
Yeah, so it's a tough one. I don't know. They're both fucking decent writers and decent musicians.
Completely.
You know, you don't get that job without knowing your shit. So I don't know. Yeah, interesting. Again, another one where I'm not quite sure what I want from a new Slipknot album.
That's why
today.
I'd be fucking angry. I think that's the key, because the last one was good at points. Like Custer was a wicked tune, but bits of it were just like, oh, okay, it's not as full of piss and vinegar as, you know, Iowa. And
I kind of felt like that album, The Grey Chapter, was a really good album, but it felt very out of sync to me. Like the pacing of it was very odd.
And yeah, for like
kind
someone's
of
press
down
shuffle.
And sped up at odd points, and it didn't quite fit for me.
Mm.
But yeah, another one to look out for. I would imagine that might come next year, but
I reckon,
no idea.
I'm pretty sure Corey said it's coming 2019.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure I read that.
I'm making some weird noises today. I don't know what that was.
A Slipknot noise.
It is an exciting Slipknot noise. Mm. Another thing that happened recently was I noticed Randy Blythe was really sounding off on US gun laws. Obviously, we're still in the wake of the tragedy, the shooting in Florida. And a lot of people, unsurprisingly, have felt the need to voice their opinions on that. Randy's never been someone to stay quiet on this kind of stuff. And I think anyone that's ever followed him for any amount of time won't be surprised by his thoughts on it. But I've seen a lot of different artists kind of talking together and debating this thing between them and all this kind of stuff. And I don't know, like, where metal's at the moment is a bit of a funny place in terms of politically and morally and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, what do you guys think about when metal bands and prominent artists kind of decide to weigh in on this kind of stuff? Obviously, everyone's entitled to their opinion, but when it kind of comes into, I don't know if it's compromising their art, but being influenced by the events going on and voicing their opinions from stages and in their music, I mean, where do you think that, is there a line to be drawn there? Do you want to hear more bands take a stand? How do you feel about this kind of stuff?
Definitely think bands should do if they feel that strongly about it. I watched a performance from Rage Against the Machine on YouTube recently, and it said it was their first ever live show. I'm not sure if it was.
Is that the one that looks like it's in a garden or something?
Yeah, it looks like it's sort of at a local fete or festival
something.
And they're on a stage, and it's kind of daylight, and there's a couple of guys in front really going for it, and then you get a few people walking past. But it was so cool to see them, because from the very beginning, they really had this clear image and this clear sound that was so strong. And you can just tell that they mean it, and they've lived it, and Zach was like throwing himself around and that groove. They just knew what they were doing, and they had this mission, and they went and did it, and it was great. So I think it can really, really work, and you could tell they just had to say something. They had to make their music political, and they did it, and it really worked. But obviously,
I mean,
some bands,
Rage Against the Machine are kind of probably the example of a band that, I mean, politics doesn't just inform them, it defines them. Yeah.
Absolutely. And then, you know, with other bands, it's just like that to varying degrees. You know, System have dipped a toe in that water, although they're currently not making new music as far as we know. And then you get to this other point of, you know, bands that kind of don't touch on it and then suddenly come out and say something. So then you're a little bit more, it could be a little bit confusing, you know, trying to marry up the music and the views. But
I guess the point I'm interested in is that it, you know, like you said System as well, if you listen to System of a Down or you listen to Rage Against the Machine or Architects or Gojira, Let Live, whoever, there's certain bands that are very, very like vocal and forward in their viewpoints, and you know what you're getting when you listen to them. But when it comes to kind of bands that maybe, I don't know, Randy's a good example of that, because Lamb of God do write about a lot of different things, but they're probably not the first kind of band you would associate with politics necessarily. You know, where do you kind of sit on whether bands should let those kind of things influence what they do? Should people be using their platforms, basically, is what I'm saying.
I think they've just got no choice if they feel that strongly. If Randy feels this strongly about gun laws, he's got no choice but to say something, because he obviously feels some kind of obligation to say, I have got this public platform. He's been through a lot of stuff as well in his life. He's been very open about his views on things and his behaviour in the past and his current behaviour. And if he feels that strongly, he has to say something, because otherwise he's going to feel like he's let himself down, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting one. I mean, you know, we're all pretty much on the same side of the... us three are all pretty much on the same side of the, you know, spectrum politically and stuff. Mm. I think anyone that follows us on Twitter or anything like that probably knows that. But you also, people have to bear in mind that the world at large is not the same thing that's in your echo chamber, and especially in the way Twitter has kind of, especially has kind of cultivated this atmosphere now, where you're kind of surrounded by your own opinions all the time, and anytime you're kind of, like I said, your little bubble is intercepted by something else, you kind of push it straight out and get back to your own little world again. Do we believe in metal as a kind of power for positive change? Because for every Randy Blythe that we might agree with and we think is, you know, very succinct in his points and, you know, really seems to be impassioned in trying to make change for the better, you also have a Ted Nugent.
Oh. Well, you do, yeah.
Okay. Like, okay, he's written a good song, but the guy's a dickhead.
Yeah. He's been talking about the NRA for years, and every time something like this comes up, I don't know whether he's reacted to this, but yeah, he always does have a view. And as you said earlier, people are entitled to their views. But I guess that might change how you feel about the person or the music if you don't agree with their views. And that's kind of where there's an interesting point, really. You know, do you just listen to the music and accept that for what it is, or do you listen to it knowing that you really fundamentally disagree with someone, something? Do you care? Do you not care?
That's a very big point as well. And obviously with a lot of stuff that's happened in the, not to get too off this particular thing, but in a lot of the stuff that's happened in the kind of wake of the Weinstein scandal and how that started to creep into our world as well, that, you know, there is that issue of where do you draw the line in being able to listen to an artist who has what you might consider abhorrent views. I mean, some people might think we have abhorrent views, and that's fine, and you're welcome to your opinion. But, you know, I would find it difficult to ever sit and listen to Ted Nugent personally, because I disagree with so much of what he stands for that I personally would find that difficult to reconcile with.
Yeah, I don't listen to bands. I don't listen to bands I disagree with. I've stopped listening to bands that have done things I find bad, for lack of a better word. Yeah, I don't listen to Pantera anymore after Phil did.
So that's a good example, really. You know, he's come out and said something. Okay, that's not really a specifically politicised issue, but he's absolutely come out and said something a couple of times.
He's done something that, you know, I disagree with, and I sort of struggle to put Pantera on, going, "Oh, but you're a bit of a dick." I think it's interesting to note as well that we talk about metal, but obviously there's various different subcultures.
Yeah, of course,
in metal.
It's not just about heavy metal.
Yeah, heavy metal. But obviously, hardcore as a scene came up realistically for quite a liberal, left-leaning viewpoint, and the community sprang out of that. So the music, for the most part, is lyrically a lot. You know, a lot of it is sort of right on. You know, middle finger to the man. You know, you know, it's all be inclusive, but, you know, but also fuck everyone. So it's hard. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so you've got this entire sort of subculture that is pretty much entirely left-leaning.
Mm-hmm.
So, which I've got that have a problem with, but it is. If there is suddenly a right-wing hardcore band came out, it might stick a little, I suppose, which is weird. I don't really know what point I'm trying to make with this, but it's just that you've got this entire country music for it is sort of seen as like a right-wing thing, and so you don't really have many liberal country artists, if you know what I mean.
I think there are hardcore right-wing artists. There's definitely some activity in America around KKK and Nazis. There's definitely some like homegrown bands
in
this
that
community
exists, you know,
that do exist, but a lot of those bands exclusively play for those kinds of
gatherings. It's quite a self-catering audience, isn't it? Like extreme, we're not talking just generally right-wing, but extreme right-wing
kind
of you know, I guess alt-right hardcore, if that's the thing.
People with exceptionally symbolic tattoos and potentially robes.
Robes? Right, I see what you mean. I was thinking like ceremonial robes. Like,
well, yeah.
Just a dressing gown.
In hardcore. That's a fucking look. Jesus.
Bad robes.
It's an interesting one. I guess that it's not something that is ever going to really have a kind of end game or final point to. For me personally, I think if you have a problem with Randy Blythe, you know, using his platform to express his opinion on gun laws, and I know that's a very divisive issue, especially for a lot of people in America right now, then, you know, you don't have to follow him, you don't have to follow what he tweets or puts on Instagram or whatever, and if you decide you want to carry on supporting him, that's up to you. You know, what I think about the issue is irrelevant to that, really, and I guess it's the same to, you know, some extreme right winger who decides that they want to sound off about, you know, immigration or whatever the hell they choose to do, religion, etc., etc. I think you've just got to kind of find your own moral line and just try and stick by it. But everything's different. Metal is an endlessly shifting world, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see where things like political issues and morality and ethics kind of come into it all as it moves forward, because we're in a world that's getting increasingly divided at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see where music fits into that, heavy music especially.
Why can't we all just get along, Merlin?
That would be nice, wouldn't it? Let's all just get along and listen to the Metal Hammer podcast. We got some reader questions. Who's asking what? What's going on?
Well, Liam Aaron Buckley asks, what movie do you guys think has the best metal soundtrack?
It's not Finding Nemo. I'm just putting that out there.
No, I've already got mine.
Oh, good.
I don't really know what it is. Can you guess?
Is it The Crow?
Oh no, it wasn't.
I gave a better Eleanor answer than Eleanor did. That's so I just
amazing.
Want that on record.
I was going to say Queen of the Damned, but The Crow is amazing.
Queen of the Damned's banging soundtrack.
The Crow's got The
though.
Cure, Nine Inch Nails, so good. Whereas Queen of the Damned, I sort of just love Jonathan Davis's work on that and the whole new metal feel.
I love the Queen of the Damned soundtrack. I don't think, we looked for it on Spotify the other day, didn't we? Because
it's not there.
Jonathan Davis has his new solo album coming out, and it reminded us of it. It's not, I don't think the tracks, because it had Static X on it, and it had, Manson's version of Redeemer is a classic.
Disturbed.
Loads of good stuff on there.
Static X.
Was it the Matrix soundtrack that had Marilyn Manson on? I had Rock Is Dead and all those tunes on. I might just make that up. Luke, you answer this while I go and find my phone and see if I can remember what's on the soundtrack.
See, I'm drawing a massive blank over what metal songs have actually been in movies lately.
I think I kind of, it's sometimes easy to think of the movie, like I love The Crow, I love Queen of the Damned, because I love the dark aesthetic of the films. And I know, like, some people say Queen of the Damned is cheesy, whatever, I don't care. And The Crow is just a classic film. Very excited to see what that remake does. And those films are just, they fit my personal aesthetic of darkness. Well, and the soundtracks go very well with the films.
If we're talking personal aesthetic, Limp Bizkit, Mission Impossible 2.
Mega. Massive song. Massive.
Huge.
I just want to say, actually, yeah, the Matrix soundtracks. Listen to this. First Matrix soundtrack had Rock Is Dead by Marilyn Manson. It's got Ministry on there. The Prodigy, who are metal as fuck. Rob Zombie, Deftones, Rammstein, Rage Against the Machine. It's pretty serious.
I need to rewatch the Matrix.
The second one has Rob Zombie again, Deftones, POD. POD on a soundtrack.
What happened to the Days of Metal soundtracks? What's the most recent metal soundtrack?
I don't know. Do you remember that period where most of the films were shit, but all the horror movies in the early 2000s had the most badass metal soundtracks, like Freddy vs. Jason and all those ones? Fucking
there's
got to
be a recent film with a metal soundtrack, and I'm really drawing a blank. Please help.
God, I can't think of one off the top of my head. The only thing that came to mind is when Zombieland, which is about 10 years old now, opened with For Whom the Bell Tolls, which is probably my favourite use of music in any film I've ever seen. That's metal as fuck. I love that.
I really enjoy, and it's not a metal song, but the end of Devil's Rejects where Freebird comes in, that whole scene.
That's
the best use of that song in any movie.
I love it when you're watching like a TV show or something, and a metal song just comes on. You're like, yeah, it's my song! And you're not expecting it. Especially if it's a mainstream one. I don't know, like a teenage high school one or something.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Shout out Lord of the Rings as well, because some of the Mordor orchestral segments are fucking metal as hell.
The Terminator soundtrack is also
Terminator 2 theme is the greatest theme ever written. You're getting me going now. But yeah, it is. So there. Andrew Goodhue asks, besides baby metal, who is your favourite upcoming band out of Japan right now? I'm not sure baby metal really count as upcoming anymore. They kind of just turned up and took over the world. But yeah. This is probably a good chance to talk about Love Bites, actually.
I think so. You're a fan.
Well, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. No, I am a bit of a fan. So Love Bites are this band who, all-female Japanese band from Tokyo. I'll set this scene. About 3-4 months ago, maybe a bit longer, I got sent a promo picture of these three stunningly gorgeous, really super glammed up looking five-piece from Japan, all holding guitars, and, you know, for risk of sounding like a bit of a cunt, the way the photo was presented and the way it all kind of looked made me think, oh, this is, you know, someone's armed a girl band with guitars, is what I honestly thought. I know that's a bit sexist, but it just felt like a gimmick is what I'm getting at, basically. And they were called Love Bites. And I ended up going to see them at the Underworld a few weeks later because they came over here. And what I don't know quite what I was expecting, but what I actually got was this really shred-heavy metal-as-fuck power metal band who kicked the absolute shit out of their instruments and played these proper, like, gung-ho, Maiden-inspired, high-tempo kind of speed metal power metal tunes. And it's good. It's good. And people were really, really going mental for it. I don't know where they've come from. We're going to do a little bit more on them in an issue coming up, so look out for that. But they're a real interesting anomaly that I think could be doing some big stuff over the coming years. So Love Bites, sorry, are definitely ones out of Japan that I'm very much interested in.
Was that a metal crowd?
It was a very metal crowd, yeah, absolutely. There were some non-metal fans as well, and I suppose, as is inevitable, some people kind of dressed up in kawaii stuff. I think, maybe not coincidentally, Hyper Japan might have been on in London that week.
Okay.
So I think a few people might have heard that was like a Japanese band playing the Underworld and whatnot. But yeah, really interesting. Not my kind of bag at all. I'm not a massive power metal guy per se, but I'm very interested with what Love Bites are going to be up to. I've heard there might be something coming from them soon as well. The album came out last year if you want to go check it out. I think there might be something else coming. And yeah, very interested in Love Bites. So that's my pick for upcoming Jap bands.
Well, I went to see a little while back X Japan at their big event, the Visual Japan Summit, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It was 3 days of Japanese bands, and each day was headlined by X Japan with a 3-hour set plus encore, which was very, very intense. And there were tons and tons of bands all kind of linked together by the Visual K scene. Probably the one that stands out to me was Versailles, but just because their outfits are so crazy. They just wear these insane dresses that are like dresses from, what's the period in Versailles? The royal period?
I don't know. Why are you looking at me for historical references? Good God.
Anyway, very sort of crazy dresses. Like,
I know what you mean. You can find all this stuff online and in one of our issues, I think. I can't remember which one it was. But yeah, you can find all this stuff online. They all look absolutely insane.
Yeah. So
Elle was showing me when she came back.
They just kind of came out of, they just kind of decided to wear these outfits, and I sort of asked them what came first, the outfits or the music, and it was the outfits, and they sort of built the whole concept around that. So they just look incredible. So they're really arresting to see.
Interesting. Any particular Japanese artists you're interested in at the moment, Luke?
Not so much now, but last year I went to see, I think it's probably around the time, Hyper Japan again. It seems to be a theme.
Yeah,
a Bandmaid played the Underworld.
Yeah, they're a pretty big deal.
Yeah, who not as metal, they're much more rock and roll than Love Bites.
And this is a band that literally dress up as maids.
Yeah, dress up as like stereotypical maids, because apparently maid cafes are a thing in Japan.
Oh yeah, of course.
Okay. And
that explains it.
Yeah, that explains it. I seem to try to remember now that the leader, I forget her name, sort of worked like a maid cafe and thought, I'm gonna start a band, and it just sort of spun off from there, really. But yeah, they just come out all female again and just play like almost just Guns N' Roses sort of rock and roll, really.
There's definitely something brewing over there at the moment, and I think it's a very wide and varied culture of metal they've got growing up there, but I think baby metal could potentially be the tip of a very large iceberg, so I'm very interested to see what comes out of Japan in the coming weeks and months, and years even.
Next question is from Henrik Ekelund, who asks, says, not a question per se, his words, but a request for a longer podcast, please. Henrik.
How lovely. You want to hear more of us.
He wants to hear more of our lovely, lovely voices. But I also ask, is there anything you can tell us about the future of the podcast now that it's back?
Well, we can tell you that it's certainly not going anywhere. I know when it's come to Metal Hammer's kind of audio platforms, we've had a few, not false starts, but a few different things we've done over the years. We did the podcast way back when. We then had the Hammer Show, which ran very successfully for a few years. We also did the In Residence on Spotify, which you can still hear the three of us on Spotify if you look up Metal Hammer In Residence. It's kind of like a radio show we did on there. But we are very much doing this podcast. It's not going anywhere. And yeah, we're stoked to be back. We're glad people are enjoying it. And as far as the length goes, yeah, we'll see. We're kind of toying with the format for now.
Mm.
Let us know what you think.
Just go over to the
yeah, exactly. Talk slower. Just go over to the Metal Hammer's readers page on Facebook. Come join us and let us know what you think and what you'd like to hear. But you'll certainly be hearing more exclusive interviews, more details behind our new issues, loads of cool shit. We're just getting started. It's going to be great.
There are two full-length separate shows coming of interviews. There's one with Judas Priest coming, which will be about half hour long, and an Andrew WK one, which will be about half an hour long.
Nice.
As well.
And what cunning young journalist bagged those, Luke?
Some legend.
Nice one, Al. Not joking. It was Morton. Well done. So yeah, we ain't going nowhere, and it's going to be a fun ride, so we're delighted to have you all with us.
William Alex Young asks, what sort of sounds or genres do you think will come to emerge or dominate the metal scene in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, I've got my first choice for this.
I know exactly what you're
saying. Exactly
what
you're
saying. No, you don't! Have we talked about this yet or not? I can't remember.
No. We know.
Yes.
Yeah, go on.
Good. But 3 podcasts in, I finally got a chance to rant about synthwave. Yeah. There is a movement bubbling under the surface of the underground at the moment that has, as Al and Luke will, to their frustration, probably tell you, absolutely dominated my headphones and speakers over the past few months. Synthwave is this fascinating, ongoing evolution in, I guess, dance music more than anything, which is essentially a ton of DJs who are also massive metalheads playing sped-up, super-synthesized versions of songs that basically sound like they were plucked from 80s montages. Bands like Perturbator, Carpenter Brute, Ghost or Ghost.
I'm obsessed with them and I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, exactly. Ghost was a great one from last year. Dan Terminus. It's all kind of a very similar, again, synthesized electronic leaning style of music that they all play. There's not a whole lot of variation between most of them, but I just think it's all absolutely fucking brilliant. And the most fascinating thing about it is that when you go to those shows, we went to see Perturbator in Ulu, or whatever it's called now, Ulu, sorry.
Student
Central in London. And you go to these shows and it's all metalheads there. The music couldn't be less metal in terms of, you know, literally not having any riffs in it or anything. But it's really striking a chord with metal fans. And these guys have gone and played some of the heaviest black metal festivals in the world. They've been to like Inferno Festival, I think, and stuff like that over in Norway. And they're getting quartz painted, spiked up Dimmu Borgir fans to pick up glow sticks and go mental, and I find it fascinating, and I genuinely think it's only just getting started. I'm very excited about it. If you want a good example of stuff, Perturbator's album, what was it called? New Breed?
Well, the new one, New Model.
New Model, that's it, thank you. Yeah, Perturbator's album from last year, New Model, is probably the best recent one, and I really like Dan Terminus's album, Automated Refrains, which came out last year as well. Go check those out, they are unlike anything else going on in metal right now, and they're fucking great.
But there's going to be loads of people who are like, well, we've been listening to this stuff for years on the goth scene, so like, why are you just kind of, you know,
well,
talking about this as if it's new? And
some of it is new, L.
I would say,
don't all go to Slime like every weekend.
I would say that there's some truth in that, but I also think what you've said, there's some truth in my own point that I've made, but also what I would say is I agree the fact that it's kind of bubbling up now and you have got them playing these metal festivals, and that seems to be the key difference. It's sort of a shift in where this is happening and what this is sounding like and who is listening to it. And yeah, I'm totally in on Perturbator and Ghost. I cannot stop listening to that record. Sorry, Ghost, if it's Ghost. I don't know.
We'll find out by next time. It's the mysterious. But yeah, Ghost or Ghost. The reason we don't want to call him Ghost is because there's obviously the main Ghost. He wears a skull mask, which just makes him cool.
That's a really good.
And no one seems to know who any of these fuckers are either.
There's a really good bleepy goth song on that one that just makes me feel like I'm in a club and I love it.
It's really, really good. So yeah, that's my pick. What else is kind of is rising up through
hardcore.
The
hardcore.
That hot young genre.
But there just seems to be more and more in different kinds of hardcore bands every single day all over the world. It just seems like everyone is playing hardcore, talking about hardcore.
It does seem to be where a lot of the, I want to almost say, creativity in heavy music is coming from. And a lot of the kind of support networks that build up scenes seems to be coming from hardcore. And actually, when you look at a lot of the exciting bands in the scene now, 3 of them are on our tour: Code Orange, Venom Prison and Power Trip. They all come from hardcore backgrounds and they all come from the hardcore scene, so it's definitely producing some good shit at the moment.
And we were listening to Crime Watch yesterday and they're very kind of that's very like old school hardcore, but there's someone like Code Orange is mixing it with industrial, so like you said about creativity, there's kind of scope for all these different kinds of sounds. It seems there's a lot of bands playing around with stuff.
Absolutely, very exciting. Morten, what are you back into?
Well, they're both. What I was going to say, really, hardcore is obviously, since Code Orange, but all eyes are on her.
Accelerated by Coda, yeah, it's definitely.
I'm on it, it's insane. But I think the sort of shoegazy post-black metal thing is coming back round again, which I'm happy about.
Oh, yeah, that's Morton's kind of trademark.
big fan of. Because, obviously, there's meant to be a new Def Heaven album this year. Very, very excited. The new Moll album, which is coming.
That's a great album.
Which is fucking great. The new Harry Curry for the Sky Records, great. But it's one of those things, same with synthwave, it's just any band that does that sort of thing, you're going to like it because you like that genre.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, loads of good shit going on. Marco LG says, which bands do you really like that most others at Metal Hammer don't get? I mean, there's one obvious answer here. And Elle knows what it is.
Everyone's looking at me.
Elle loves Disturbed. Fucking loves them. And I'm not talking about, like, probably where most of us lie, which is Down With The Sickness comes on in a club and we all lose our minds. Elle is a dedicated Disturbed follower.
Well, I think it was because... I'm not going to feel any shame or guilt about this.
So you shouldn't. We don't do guilty pledges here.
It was basically when I started going to metal clubs underage, Disturbed would be on, and it was just one of those things where I just got really into them and I just never really stopped liking them. And yeah, they're just, you know, good to sing along to, good to put on.
Absolutely. I'm kind of been, weirdly, for something we've got going on coming up, I can't believe I'm about to say this, I've been revisiting Aylstorm.
I like Aylstorm. I was there at their first Bloodstock performance. I got a picture with them because I was very excited.
I was there. I was there watching them at, what was it called? Hard Rock Hell, like, 10 years ago. So I think I reviewed their album for Soundshop, which is the website I used to write for, actually. But yeah, I've been revisiting them recently, and I forgot, as much as they are the most ridiculous band to ever set foot in our scene, they do have some good songs.
Yeah, they do.
And Dragon Force as well. I kind of went off on a little kind of power metal, folk metal bender. And Dragon Force is another one, which we probably don't champion much through the office, but they got jams.
My attention span isn't good enough sometimes for Dragon Force.
Isn't that a good thing, though? Because their songs just go all over the place, don't they?
Yeah, but it's sort of too diversionary for me.
Fair. Good word.
Thanks. Nice.
There's nothing you like, I don't think. Jack of all trades, aren't you?
Yeah, there's nothing that springs to mind where if I put it on, everyone's going to go, oh, fuck this. But
yeah.
When you mentioned Aylstorm, I was just thinking, like, you know what? When you put it on the other day in the office, we all went, I know this one, I like this one. It's so weird.
You like very, very, very noisy stuff, which is great, but sometimes if, you know, you've just got up in the morning or something and you put something on, it's a bit much. I can't think of any examples of bands, though.
Cheers. I say, like, very, very noisy, horrible music a lot of the time, but also a lot of fun bands as well.
Long may it continue. We'll be talking a bit more about Aylstorm for something special we've got coming up in a future issue, so watch out for that. And that's it, really. Turnstile's brand new album, Time and Space, is streaming right now on Metal Hammer. It's officially out on Spotify and everything else on Friday. God, I went to Spotify first. Check me out.
You're
millennial
so young.
Right here, everybody. It's officially out on Friday, but it's streaming right now on metalhammer.com. Go check it out. We were just talking about how productive and brilliant the hardcore scene has been recently, and that is an album you need to hear immediately. Get it in you.
Genuinely great.
Luke, you're going to Conjurer tomorrow, I believe.
Yeah, for the debut album of the year so far. They're going to play it in full.
Big shout, I back it.
Great.
Are they playing it in full?
Apparently, yeah.
Amazing. I can't wait to hear about that. And hell, you're going to see King 810?
I am.
Oh, big
I'm
one.
I'm going to run over and see that.
Run over? From where?
Tai Chi.
I'm so glad I asked because I didn't know what it was going to be. That is brilliant. Oh, God, I forgot you do Tai Chi. Excellent. So Elle's going to be ready to kick some ass spiritually to King 810, and Luke will be at Conjurer. We'll be reviewing both those gigs on the podcast next week. We'll also be revealing our brand new issue. It's an absolute screamer. We will see you then. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.